Up next, the debate over the use of high-tech, high-skilled workers on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're going to be talking now about some developments in that field. For example, this fall, Microsoft plans to open a software development center in Richmond, British Columbia, just up the road a piece from Redmond, Washington. And Microsoft is a beloved institution in Redmond, so why go over the border to Canada? When asked, Microsoft officials cite the expected corporate talking points, including the exciting fledgling high-tech industry that's near Vancouver. But dig deeper into the company's statement, and there's a more compelling, perhaps, reason. The move, quote, allows the company to recruit and retain highly skilled people affected by immigration issues in the United States. Microsoft and other high-tech companies have been lobbying hard for changes to the visa system that limits the number of foreign-born workers coming into the country to fill science, math, and engineering jobs. They say there's a real shortage of highly skilled workers in the U.S., and we need to allow more foreign workers into the country to do those jobs. Critics, though, are crying foul. They say there's no real worker shortage and that companies can fill jobs with U.S. workers. Some critics claim companies are abusing the current skilled worker visa system, bringing foreign workers to train for jobs here and then moving those jobs overseas, leaving U.S. workers without jobs. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to take a look at the immigration of high-skilled workers. Is the shortage real, with jobs needing to be filled by foreign workers? Or is the shortage one of the money? Is it the shortage really of money, where companies are looking for cheaper overseas labor? Our number, 1-800-989-TALK. And you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com or look for the avatar in Second Life at SciSchools over there, and we'll take questions there in Second Life. Let me introduce my guests. Martin Lawler is the author of Professionals, A Matter of Degree, published by the American Immigration Lawyers Association. He is an immigration lawyer with Lawler & Lawler in San Francisco. He joins us today from the studios of KQED. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Ron Hira is the author of Outsourcing America, What's Behind Our National Crisis and How We Can Reclaim American Jobs. That's out, published in 2005. He's a research associate with the Economic Policy Institute and assistant professor of public policy at the Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York. He joins us today from WXXI in Rochester. Welcome to the program, Dr. Hira.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about that. Let me get into that Microsoft outsourcing. Is that the right way to call it?
Well, Ira, the Microsoft has been talking about this for quite a few years. And their executives were on Capitol Hill this last summer when immigration was being debated. And they were talking that they have 3,000 unfilled jobs. Mm-hmm. And they just can't get enough visas. The system that's set up now has two basic components for scientists and engineers. One is for people of extraordinary ability. You don't have to be an Einstein, but you have to be at the top of your field. And there are temporary visas and green card processes for these individuals. And that system works pretty well. There's starting to be some shortages which concern us. The other aspect is for the people who are not necessarily at the top of their field, the professionals, the engineers, the employees at Microsoft in a lower level positions. And typically we have a foreign student will graduate from a university, get a one-year work permit, and then they'll move on to get an H-1B visa, which is a temporary work visa valid for 3 years with a three-year extension in most cases. And then Microsoft or their employer can file papers with the Department of Labor and sponsor them by proving that there's a worker shortage, and they can then get a green card. Mm-hmm. This latter system is very broken. There are just not enough visas, either temporary visas or green card visas. It's taking years and years and years. And companies like Microsoft are now looking at setting up operations overseas because they can't get the workers they need.
Well, give me some of the numbers for this year.
This year there are a limit by statute of 65,000 H-1B numbers. And in April 1st, the very first day that the numbers became available or the visas became available, they received 123,000 visa applications. They got so many that the Immigration Service had to hold a lottery to determine who is going to get these visas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's also an extra 20,000 visas for masters and PhDs who are educated in the United States, and those numbers were used in 30 days.
Hmm. Let me get a counterpoint from Ron here. Ron?
Sure. Well, Mr. Lawler has covered a lot of different ground, but let me go back to the Microsoft issue. What's interesting about it was the timing of the press release, and of course Microsoft has been lobbying this issue very hard, so I don't think we should read – I mean, we should keep that in mind when we look at this. But if you look at Microsoft's numbers, they have about a 90% offer acceptance rate. That means when they offer a position to a job candidate, 90% of the time they accept, and they get tens and literally tens of thousands of resumes from qualified people all the time. Why they moved to Canada, I think, was for many multiple reasons, and certainly they were able to use this quite cleverly, I think, timing-wise, to get good press for their immigration advocacy position. But the problem for Microsoft really is that they're being crowded out by companies that are using the program for cheap labor. And so it's a little bit odd to me that Microsoft has not sort of acknowledged that the problem in the system is that most of the visas are being gobbled up by offshore outsourcing firms trying to transfer work overseas and also using it for cheap labor. So that's really the better way of thinking about the problem in terms of trying to come up with solutions for Microsoft. And there's a counterexample to the Microsoft issue, which is Wipro, which is a major offshore outsourcing firm, has recently announced that they're going to open up a development center outside of Atlanta, in part because they can't bring in as many H-1Bs as they would like. So they're actually being forced to hire Americans, which is a change in their business model.
So you're saying there are enough people to fill the high-tech jobs here that we don't have to bring people in from outside?
Well, what I'm saying is we really don't know because there's no labor market test for the H-1B. So there's no requirement for you to bring in a guest worker to first look for an American. And, in fact, you can replace Americans. Now, why would a company do that? Well, because there's loopholes in the law that allow companies to pay those H-1B, those guest workers, lower wages. And because of that, there's a strong incentive to bring them up. So there's really no way for us to determine based on the fact that the H-1B quota got filled up that's due to any kind of labor market shortage because there's no labor market test in the program at all.
Martin, how do you react to that?
Well, there is no labor market test for H-1Bs, but many of the H-1Bs, when they go on to apply for green cards, have to pass a labor market test. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, validates the fact that there is a shortage. There have been a number of studies and statistical analysis of the engineering and math-based and science-based graduates in our universities, and some of them say in the master's degree programs 50% are from overseas. And it's important that we gather up these people and keep them here to, you know, build the products, then they discover the cures for, you know, cancer and Alzheimer's and other diseases. These people are invaluable.
The way to measure a labor market shortage would be to look at wages. And if you look at wages for scientists, technologists, engineers, and mathematicians have kept pace with the wages for everybody else. So the wage numbers don't show us any kind of shortage. Having said that, what I think is that it makes sense for us to try to encourage the best and brightest to stay here, but we should do it in the right way. And many of the firms that are the top users of the H-1B program, so the top number two in terms of users, Wipro, applied for 19,000 H-1Bs last year. They applied for 69 green cards. So the argument that the H-1B is a bridge towards a green card and that somehow gives us comfort that there's a labor market in the green card process doesn't really hold water because these companies are not trying to bring in the workers for green cards.
Martin, why is it so confusing to our listeners here?
Well, I Wipro, according to some of Ron's writing, had 2,500 H-1Bs, not 19,000, and I think that he's counting some papers that are filed at the Department of Labor. And one individual, if he moves from job to job, can have multiple filings with the Department of Labor. WIPRO doesn't have any 19,000 H-1Bs in the United States. That's just
right,
not true.
But Martin, to be clear about that, those applications are not just willy-nilly simple applications. Those are attestations that they've looked for American workers first, that they're not replacing American workers. So that's the real that process, those 19,000 applications in one single year, that's the primary safeguard to the American workforce and also to those foreign workers to ensure that they're being paid a fair wage. So to say that that 19,000 is meaningless, I think, is wrong. And that's just basically to say that the safeguards for American workers are meaningless.
Let me bring this up because it's not just high-tech companies that are looking for more H-1B visas, and these are visas for high-tech workers. But we have universities, we have biotech companies. They also want to be able to hire large numbers of both foreign-born professional scientists and engineers. Is that not true, Martin?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I have a number of cases I'm working at right now with people with temporary visas, and they're creating a solar power plant. Another gentleman is creating a scope that you can go through the esophagus, make a little incision in the stomach, and you can steer this scope around the body for biopsies and surgery. And this man is going to get a Nobel Prize for medicine. He's just going to change how we do surgery completely. I have another client who made a major discovery on malaria. You know, malaria is not going to be solved in some backwater place in Africa. It's going to be solved at a major university or research lab in the United States.
Ron, what about let me just interrupt because I want to get on to other issues here because there's so many of them. Ron, why would you leave these talented people out? I mean, why not bring them in?
It would be dumb to do so. Mm-hmm. And what we should do is not end these programs, but have a rational approach to encouraging the best and brightest to come in. The problem is the solutions that Microsoft and Compete America and Mr. Lawler are supporting don't make sense and actually are crowding out some of these top people. But to go to your point about scientists and whatnot, only 5% of H-1Bs have PhDs. And so that's not really representative of what the H-1B program is about. I agree that we need to have a rational high-skill immigration system. I think we can absorb more high-skill immigrants. I think we should encourage them to come here and stay here permanently. And the solutions really are on the green card side of things and fixing the corrupted H-1B system. The Durbin-Grassley legislation that's been introduced in the Senate, I think, goes a long ways to do that.
We're talking about immigration and high-tech workers this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. I want to change gears in a little different direction and bring on someone who's actually gone through the system, as they say. She's a scientist from the Netherlands who has gone through this process and joins us now to talk about her experience. Miriam Zegers is an assistant professor in the Department of Surgery at the University of Chicago in Illinois, and she's talking to us from her office there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Zegers.
Hi.
Tell us about your experience, how you went through the system, and what you got out of it, and maybe some shortcomings, and how you might fix it. That's a big question.
So I went through a lot of different visas. So I did my PhD in the Netherlands on aspects related to liver development. And after finishing my PhD, I decided to go abroad for a couple of years because I think generally in the Netherlands, that's being seen that it's very important for your scientific development to just go somewhere else and see what other people do at other places. And really, most people go to the United States because that's really, at least for biomedical research, still by far the number one place to do that. So I initially was planning to go for like 2 or 3 years for a postdoctoral research position. So I went to University of California, San Francisco, initially on a J-1 visa. And, well, like 2 years into my research, actually pretty soon I realized, why America is still number one in biomedical research.
So you wanted to stay here a little longer?
Well, actually, yes. Yeah. Because really when you come into place at UCSF or at another big research university, you realize that There's so many people thinking about the same problems, and the environment is so intellectually stimulating that I decided, well, I think I want to stay longer for a couple of reasons, really. So the J1 at that time was a maximum of 3 years, but if you start a new project, which you generally do after finishing up PhD, it generally, well, you have to have luck. You can be lucky and finish something up in 2 or 3 years, but generally it takes longer. And really, the idea of a postdoc is that it prepares you for a faculty position, and that you're ready to take on a real job, basically.
So to make a long story short, because of time, you wound up getting a green card or applying for a green card.
Right. So initially, I extended my J1 for an H1B visa, and I was on that for 3 or 4 years or so. And then what happened is, initially I was still planning back to go to the Netherlands, but I got more and more, because that was my initial idea, but I got more and more excited actually about staying here. And then I got invited to apply for a faculty position. Mm-hmm. So, well, and since my husband was here as well, we're both in science, and we ended up getting both offers. And that's really a holy grail in science. All of science.
Well, so you lucked out on that.
Right. So then we decided, okay, well, we're going to stay here for the long haul and apply for a green card. And that's how I came in contact with Martin, who was actually really helpful in guiding me through the process.
Did you think and along this way that you're taking someone else's job who might be a Native American?
Well, no. So I didn't even apply for what I get asked for a job.
Mm-hmm. They asked you to stay.
They asked me to stay, yeah.
And so you did.
And I did, yeah.
You did. And you think that you're pretty typical. Martin, do you think she's typical of what happens?
Ability field, indeed. She's been doing some amazing research on wound healing, and she's a PhD, and she's very accomplished. And this particular person usually can travel through the immigration process, and so there are little bumps here and there and complications, but the system works pretty well for these individuals.
Well, Miriam, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us, and good luck to you.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much.
Miriam Zegger is Assistant Professor in the Department of Surgery at the University of Chicago. We're going to take a short break, and lots of people, a very hot issue, want to talk about high-tech jobs, importing workers and scientists from overseas, staying here, leaving temporarily. What's your opinion on it? Our number, 1-800-99-8255. Also, go to SciSchools in Second Life and look for the T-shirt. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about immigration and high-skilled workers. My guests are Ron Heer, author of Outsourcing America, What's Behind Our National Crisis, and How We Can Reclaim American Jobs. Martin Lawler, author of Professionals, A Matter of Degree. He's also an immigration lawyer. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Ron, what was wrong with that story we heard?
There was nothing wrong with it. In fact, if you had that same kind of story go through right now, she would have had no problems. She would not have been crowded out of the system because she would have been employed by an employer that was exempt. The problem with the story is that that's not representative of the typical H-1B. As I just gave you the numbers, only 5% of H-1Bs have PhDs. The typical story is someone with a bachelor's or equivalent, which means that they got the bachelor's somewhere else. And the typical story is that they're paid very low wages.
Mm-hmm. Ron, you agree? Martin, you agree?
Martin.
Yeah.
there are specific rules requiring employers to pay the prevailing wage rate, but as determined by government or private wage surveys. And if employers don't pay those wage rates, then they can be sanctioned. It can be stopped from using the H-1B process altogether. Microsoft and other big companies pay the proper wages. And if somebody's not following the rules, well, then they should be sanctioned.
These are code phrases that are being used, right? Prevailing wage is a term of art. It's a legal term of art. And let me give you some prevailing wages. Infosys was certified by the Department of Labor, meeting the prevailing wage requirement to bring 100 computer programmers in at $9.15 an hour. HCL America got 75 computer programmers at $24,000 a year. So as Martin knows, the prevailing wage requirement is really not market wages, and it's fairly easy for an employer who chooses to do so to bring in cheaper labor.
And how would you change the law then? What would you say it's broken, it needs to be fixed, what would you do?
That's right. Well, the solution's pretty straightforward. There's a bill that's been introduced in the Senate by senators. It's a bipartisan bill by Senators Durbin and Grassley. And it does really three things. It looks for U.S. It ensures that all employers have to look for U.S. workers first, that they don't replace U.S. workers with H-1Bs and L-1s, which we haven't talked about at all.
Quickly, what's an L-1?
Well, an L-1 is a sort of a sister visa to the H-1B. It's for intra-company transfers. And many of the same very heavy users of the H-1B that offshore jobs you also use the L-1 when they can. And in fact, the L-1's riddled with even more loopholes. There's no prevailing wage requirement. There's no wage considerations, and there's very little information on them. And there's no cap on that. The third thing that the Durbin-Grassley bill, which is S-1035, would do is would audit companies to ensure that they're complying with these rules. Right now, we have no audit mechanism. Only H-1B workers who are whistleblowers really can bring issues up. And there's obvious reasons why H-1B workers wouldn't want to do that, because the employer holds this work permit, this guest worker permit. Mm-hmm. So the minute the H-1B worker says something, they could be out of status if they're out of a job.
Martin, what's wrong with this bill?
Well, I disagree with Ron about that. He's got this visa out here painting as the boogeyman. And I think his concept here, which is a novel theory that somehow these H-1Bs are used for outsourcing jobs, you know, it costs the employer $2,500 alone in government filing fees to file one of these applications. They file them in April. They can't use them for another 6 months. You know, there's another visa classification that's been on the law books for years. Congress created this, an H-3 trainee visa. This is no secret. It costs maybe $300 in filing fees. The company can bring in one of its foreign workers and, or let's say its factory overseas, train that person up, pay them according to their overseas salary, give them a hotel and a stipend here, and it would cost 10% of what it would cost an H-1B worker. And if they wanted to outsource jobs that way, they would use the H-3, would never use an H-1. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any economic sense. This is a novel thing which I've never heard anybody talk about, and I think it's a red herring.
Well, six of the top 10 firms, let me read them out, of H-1B users: Infosys, Wipro, Tata Consultancy, Satyam, Cognizant, and Putney. All of these are major offshore outsourcing firms. Those are six of the top 10 H-1B beneficiaries, employers. And in fact, the Commerce Minister of India, Kamal Nath, called the H-1B the outsourcing visa. So it's not a novel theory. It's the outsourcing industry itself is saying that this is the visa that they need.
Let me go to the phones. 1-800-989-8255. David in Oklahoma City. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, right now I'm attending a junior college, a sub-branch of a university in Oklahoma. And there's, I would say, hundreds of students that are in training for IT positions. Either they're CompTIA certified, working on their Microsoft certification. The workforce is there. The jobs just aren't. And, this is real similar to, like, south of the border, people that come across willing to work for cash, you know, because they don't want to get sent back. You know, those are the jobs Americans don't want. They don't want to work for $5 an hour, you know, or for cash only. And if you say something that's against the boss's grain, there you go. Hey, see you later. We'll find somebody else who can work for you, you know. Just as easy as I got you, I can find somebody else. Mm. And I'm afraid that's the way that corporate America is kind of turning to.
Ron, you would agree with that, I imagine.
Exactly. I think Ron's on the same boat.
Well, I think the issue is that there are good employers that are trying to use this in the right way, in the way that it's being at least publicly justified and politically justified. And we should fix the program. We shouldn't end it, but we should treat American workers fairly, and we should treat these foreign guest workers fairly, too.
Hmm. Martin, do you think that the cap on the visas is too low?
Absolutely.
What number should it be, do you think?
Oh, I think it should probably be at least tripled. The H-1B visa is the stepping stone to green cards. And as I cited in my Wall Street Journal article this summer, a UC Berkeley professor has analyzed startup companies, and it found that half of the startup companies in Silicon Valley have at least one immigrant founder. And she estimated that these startup companies have created 450,000 direct jobs. Andy Grove is an immigrant, and he built Intel what it is today. So the H-1 visas directly relate to a huge amount of job growth and technology development in the United States.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. You can visit Science School in Cylance and ask an avatar a question. Khalif Ari at an avatar there says, why can't they just make it more expensive to hire someone via an H-1 visa, say 10% more than the going average? That workable?
In some respects, that already happens. The wages set forth in the government wage surveys actually include bonuses. But when the employer goes to calculate their wage, they're not allowed to use bonuses. That's surely one possibility, which would make things more difficult and add on another layer of bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Rose and Evan, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
If we look at the actual wage data, H-1Bs, about half of the H-1Bs went to computer occupations, a little more than half. And in those occupations, the median wage, so that's about half, the 50th percentile, they were paid $50,000 a year. That was the wage, the median wage for computer occupations. That's below the entry-level wage for IT workers.
Well, the proper wage for a computer engineer in Silicon Valley is, depending upon which area you're in, is between $72,000 roughly and about $76,000 according to the government wage surveys.
The problem is that at the 75th percentile of people who actually got H-1Bs and computer occupations, this is at the 75th percentile, it's only $60,000. So it's way below what Martin's saying. Most of the H-1Bs are getting low wages.
Rose in Evansville, Florida. Hi, Rose.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Okay. You are having a very interesting discussion this hour, but you seem to be missing the point.
Make
the
it for
is
us.
We are having illegal aliens coming in, and they are taking our jobs away. And I think the root of the problem is that these owners of the company are knowingly giving these jobs to people who they know they're not legal. They are giving them the jobs at a lower rate. And they are not just jobs of picking fruit. They are jobs working with computers. They are jobs working on landscaping, who a friend of mine lost his job because an illegal alien, a Mexican, came in, and he said, I'll take the job for $3
So you're saying you're saying the high-tech industry is just a reflection of the rest of what's going on in other jobs.
That's exactly right. Huh. I feel that those employers who hire somebody that they know they're not legal should be fined, number one. They are not paying taxes on them. Hello, isn't that illegal?
Okay, let me get a reaction. Thanks for calling, Rose. She doesn't have a strong opinion on this, I don't think. But we've heard this a lot. I mean, she has a valid criticism that you hear a lot from different people, that this is flying under the radar screen. Martin, how do you react to that?
Well, our whole immigration system is geared to provide visas for people who are highly educated. And it's a completely different system that allows people to immigrate here if you are highly educated and have, tech jobs, for example. The people who are here from Mexico cutting lawns, there are many laws to make it extremely difficult, if not virtually impossible, for them to ever legalize their status.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8. Let me just get in a quick station break. I'm Ira Flatto. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Martin Lawler and Ron Hero. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, well, I think the problem in the high skill side is not so much the illegality. I think most employers are following the law. The problem is that the law is broken. It needs to be fixed. And the other point that the caller makes, that which I think is an important one, is that companies, whether it's Bill Gates or Oracle or any of these high tech companies, they don't exist to increase the U.S. economic welfare. They don't exist to increase the number of U.S. jobs. They're compensated by increasing their share price, by increasing profits. And so if they can lobby and get cheaper labor, they certainly will.
So you would say then that's why we might see more of these high-tech companies going north to Canada, perhaps.
Well, the high-tech companies can go to north to Canada now. I mean, and they're certainly moving in droves to India and other low-cost areas. IBM will have 100,000 workers in India in the next 3 years, up from 3,000 just a few years ago. At the same time, they've been cutting back in the U.S. And that has nothing to do with immigration. That has to do with their business model, which is, again, trying to maximize profits, and they're able to. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But we have to understand why the companies are arguing for what they want, their motivation is.
So to bring this all full circle, you're saying that these companies have a large enough talent pool right here in this country of high-tech workers if they were willing to pay the same going wage, the high wage that is being paid by the workers already there. Would that be fair? Is that your argument?
I would say that we don't know what the answer to that is. What I would say is that we can and should absorb more high-skill immigrants. So I wouldn't say it quite the way you're framing it. What I would say is that we don't know if there's a shortfall or not because of all of these loopholes and problems with the law. Mm-hmm. What we should do, though, is try to encourage the best and brightest to come here and immigrate permanently and have them play on a level playing field so that they can bargain just like an American worker and become Americans, rather than being in this what some people call an indentured servitude in an H-1B.
And, Martin, your argument would be that there are still too many jobs, even if we were to allow all these visas that we have now, going unmet.
Absolutely. And, you know, Ron just talks about cost, and is, you know, disparaging our best corporations here. And any HR person or any employer knows that cost is a factor in hiring people, but you also want excellent workers. And you need people to perform certain skills. And so there are many, many factors taken into the hiring process. It's not just cost. The people, these large technology companies, which are driving our economy, they're not just going out and trying to find the cheapest worker they can possibly find, regardless of anything else. Most of them, I'm sure, rather hire Americans rather than going through all this hassle with the H-1Bs and all the expense. But we just don't graduate enough scientists and math-based graduates from our universities. And those that we do frequently are people from overseas. And we need to incorporate these people into our economy. And that's what's going to make our economy vibrant and grow as all of us baby boomers here go off into retirement, where we need somebody to be running this economy.
But Ron is saying bring these people in. Isn't he? Martin, he's saying, go ahead, go hire these people, but let them, you know, become full-time, full members of the society.
Well, what he's doing is he says, sure, hire them for their green cards, but he wants to basically eliminate the H-1B visa, which is a critical step for people to be here while they go through the slow immigration process.
Ron, is that what you're saying?
No. In fact, I said about three times, I think, during this broadcast that I don't think that the H-1B should be abolished. I think that we should have a way to fix the H-1B system so that American workers are not disadvantaged and that foreign workers are paid a market wage, and we need a rational process to a green card. It's unreasonable for many of these workers who do want to get green cards and their employers are sponsoring them to wait 6, 8, or 10 years for a green card. So there's lots of problems with, with the programs, they can be fixed. And I see that the H-1B system has been a very valuable one in many cases. The problem is it's been corrupted.
All right. We'll have to leave it right there and pick it up later. I want to thank my guest, Ron Hira, author of Outsourcing America, What's Behind Our National Crisis and How We Can Reclaim American Jobs. He's also assistant professor of public policy at Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester. Thank you for joining us, Ron.
Thank you.
Martin Lawler, author of Professionals, A Matter of Degree, and he's also an immigration lawyer with the Lawler & Lawler in San Francisco, California. Thank you, Martin, for taking time to be with us.
And thank you, Ira. Nice to talk with you, Ron.
You're welcome. Our program is produced by Karen Vergoth and senior producer Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Our intern is Josh Romero. We're going to say goodbye to Josh this week. I hope he's going on to bigger and better things. They do graduate. Thank you, Josh. You've been terrific. We're going to miss you. If you'd like to write us, surf over to sciencefriday.com. We're blogging and emailing also a science school in the Cylands at Second Life. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.